Let's get started on another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by turning to 2 Samuel chapter number 20. We remember that last week we finished up the coup of Absalom, which failed. Absalom was killed by Joab and Abishai, despite David's demands that he be preserved. And then David was able to return to Jerusalem as the accepted king. But we discover in chapter number 20 of 2 Samuel, not everybody is ready to let bygones be bygones. There is one Benjamite man that decides he would rather be the king than David. So let's read the text, 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 1. Now there happened to be a worthless man, and some of you have the old-fashioned wording here, a son of Belial, which is a way of talking about that he is just absolutely not even worth the skin that he's in, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. So he comes from the tribe of the last kingdom dynasty. And he blew the trumpet, and he said, "We have no portion in David. We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." Now, some of this was probably prompted by the argument between the Judeans and the other tribe leaders over which one of them has the bigger stake in David as king. It was prompted by the fact that the Judeans were the ones that made sure he got across the Jordan back into the Holy Land proper. And when the non-Judean tribes objected to the fact that they didn't get to participate in that, the Judeans treated them rudely. And then the Israelis treated the Judeans rudely, and it was just a mess. Well, here's a guy that decides, we don't even want to have David as our king anymore. I'll be the king. And so verse 2, all the men of Israel withdrew from David and followed Sheba the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah followed their king steadfastly from the Jordan to Jerusalem. So we haven't even finished officially with the last mini civil war, and we're into another one. David, according to verse 3, came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 concubines whom he had left to care for the house and put them in a house under guard and provided for them, but did not go into them. So they were shut up until the day of their death, living as if in widowhood. Now, this is the group of women, secondary wives that he had, and let's not beat around the bush about this. David should not have had all these wives. It was against God's intentions. But he did. And these were secondary wives, maybe business contracts or something like that is what their marriage is sealed. So their children didn't have a place in the line to the throne. So David left them behind to kind of keep track of the palace, make sure it was taken good care of, because they wouldn't have been of any threat or interest to Absalom. But at the advice of a wicked counselor, Absalom had taken these women, put them in a tent on the top of the palace, and had gone into them one at a time, until he'd had sexual relations with each one of them as a demonstration that he was done with his father and that he was basically taking over the kingdom from his father. So all these women in the customs of that time period have now really kind of ceased being married to David. And so they are now going to be given... It's kind of a weird word that we would use, but I guess it's the closest we can come up with, some sort of secure retirement, where they will live the rest of their lives without coming into any type of intimate contact with David, but still being treated as the widows of a king. And they'll be secured and provided for and have a time of retirement. Now, verse 4. Then the king said to Amasa. Now, you've got to remember who Amasa is. He's related to David. I think he's a nephew of sorts. And he has become the new king of the army, specifically the army of Judah at this point. And that's the position that Joab has had up to this moment. But David has had it with Joab because of the death of Absalom. And so Amasa is now going to be the one prosecuting this civil war on David's behalf to put down the rebellion of this Sheba of Benjamin. So he says to Amasa, call the men of Judah together to me within 3 days and be here yourself. So muster the troops. So Amasa went to summon Judah, but he delayed beyond the set time that had been appointed him. So he didn't jump right on top of it. He took extra days. David said to Abishai, now, Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him, lest he get himself to fortified cities and escape from us. So David chooses not to wait for Amasa to get back with the Judean army. He sends a pursuit force under Abishai. He's still mad at Abishai, but not as much as he is at Joab. So he sends this rapid pursuit force with Abishai to track down and possibly, if they can, kill the rebel Sheba. Verse 7, and there went out after him Joab's men and the Kerethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty men. They went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now, the Kerethites, that's a Hebrew word that has the idea of cutting a covenant. So these are the sworn bodyguard of David. They're his most loyal men. The Pelethites, that's a word in Hebrew that's related to running. So they're the courier corps. So the army that he does have, particularly the group that's always supported him, he sends them out as well to track down this rebel. Verse number 8. When they were at the great stone that is in Gibeon. So Gibeon is where the tabernacle is located. And we've seen before that it appears to be typical when Israeli soldiers go on maneuvers, on military action, they will go to the tabernacle and offer sacrifices on their behalf, get things right with God, and petition him for assistance. So they've apparently gone to do some worship at Gibeon. And that's when Amasa came to meet them. So he's finally back. He must have been delayed not horribly long, but just enough to make David send this group out ahead of him. But he catches up with them, and then this happens. Now Joab was wearing a soldier's garment, and over it was a belt with a sword in its sheath fastened on his thigh. And as he went forward, it fell out. Now, I have to give you my opinion here, and all it's worth is my opinion, okay? I think Joab did this on purpose. It is unlikely that a professional military man would wear his sword in its sheath in such a way, haphazard way, that when he bends forward, it falls out of its sheath. So I think he did this on purpose so that he could do the next thing that happens. I believe this is a murder plot. And David will feel that it is a murder as well. So Joab said to Amasa, "Is it well with you, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. Now, they're relatives, they're cousins. And Amasa has just been made the commander over all of the military forces in place of Joab. And Joab doesn't like that. And he's not going to let that stand. And so he's going to remove the problem. So he lets his sword fall out of its sheath. He picks it up and has it in his hand, open, naked bladed, whenever he gives the customary Middle Eastern kissing to his cousin Amasa. That is, you know, reaching up and taking hold of the side of the face. In this case, it talks about the beard. And so he apparently puts his right hand on the face of Amasa and kisses it, but the sword, which is in his left hand, just freshly picked up. Amasa did not observe the sword that was in Joab's hand, so Joab struck him with it in the stomach and spilled his entrails to the ground without striking a second blow, and he died. That is a clear-cut case of premeditated murder. And then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. So this is how Joab took out his contender for the top military site, so that he could then put down this latest rebellion against King David and resume his post as the commander of the United Israel Army. But they run into a little bit of problem because of the shock of this situation. Verse 11, "One of Joab's young men took his stand by Amasa and said, 'Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab.'" So there's a call for a loyalty check. If you're on Joab's side, if you're on David's side, then you need to follow Joab. Now, Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the highway, so he wasn't all the way dead yet. As it said earlier, and I'm sorry for the graphic nature, but we need to tell the story as it really happened. When he stabbed him in the gut, he apparently slid the blade sideways and disemboweled the man. That is not a death blow. So he is wallowing around in his own intestines and in his blood. And it says here, anyone who came by saw him and stopped. So they're shocked at what they're seeing here. The commander of their military force is laying there dying in front of them. When the man, that is the man that's been calling for the loyalty check for Joab, when the man saw that all the people stopped, he carried Amasa out of the highway into the field and threw a garment over him. So he drags him off the road and covers him up. And when he had taken him out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. So Amasa is now dead. He is the third person that Joab has personally murdered. There was Abner, the son of Ner, that David was working with to get all of Israel under his kingship. Joab murdered him because he wouldn't let go the battle death of his little brother Asahel at the hands of Abner. Then there was Absalom, the son of David, recently. I mean, that's only been a few days ago. And now Amasa, his own cousin. he is murdered because David preferred him as the new king, or excuse me, as the new military commander. Well, verse 14, Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth Ma'akah. So this is up to the north. And all the Bichrites assembled and followed him in. And all the men who were with Joab came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Ma'akah. They cast up a mound against the city, and it stood against the rampart, and they were battering the wall to throw it down. So they chase this rebel, Sheba, to a certain city. Then they besiege the city, trying to get to him. Verse 16, then a wise woman called from the city, "Listen, listen! Tell Joab, come here that I may speak to him, or speak to you." And he came near, and the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "I am." Then she said to him, "Listen to the words of your servant." And he answered, "I am listening." Then she said, "They used to say in former times, let them but ask counsel at Abel." And so they settled the matter. "I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of he who is?" So she wants to know, apparently is the fiat leader of this community. "Why are you trying to destroy our city?" Joab answered, "Far be it from me, far be it that I should swallow up or destroy. This is not true. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim called Sheba, the son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give him a loan, and I will withdraw from the city." So Joab's response is, "I'm not trying to destroy anyone except this rebel. He's the only one I'm really after." The woman said to Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown to you over the wall." And then the woman went to all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba the son of Bichri and threw it to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, every man to his home, and Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. So this is how this rebellion of a Benjamite ended very rapidly, with his head being thrown over the city by those that he thought would protect him in his rebellion against King David. So in just a matter of a few weeks, David has escaped two challenges to his throne, one from his own son and one from a relative of Saul, the Benjamite king before David. Verse 23 is a reminder to us, I think, at this point, of some of the leadership in the kingdom. Joab is right back there in command of the army again, and it's all because he is such a powerful person. But David is not going to forget what he has done now and in the past. And that will be part of David's cleaning house as he turns the reins of the kingdom over to his son Solomon. Who, by the way, if I'm correct that this is all happening in the 35th year of King David, that would make Solomon, I believe, right around 13 years of age. Because the Jewish tradition is that he was 15 when he was first inaugurated as king, and that was while David was still alive. Well, it would appear that the weakness of David that was demonstrated by Absalom's coup and by Sheba of Benjamin's attempted coup gave the Philistines an idea. Remember, the Philistines have been part of David's kingdom by force since earlier in the time that he's been reigning from Jerusalem. It seems as if they decide to rebel against David at this time. And so I want you to go to chapter 21 now, down to verse number 15. We already looked at the material at the first part of this chapter because I think it fell earlier in the kingdom of David. This, I believe, though, matches up with the time period we're looking at now. There's a parallel over in 1 Chronicles chapter 20, starting at verse number 4. So 2 Samuel 21, 15, there was war again between the Philistines and Israel, and David went down together with his servants, and they fought against the Philistines. Now the 1 Chronicles passage tells us specifically we're talking about Gezer, where this fight took place. It's one of the cities in the Philistine area. It tells us, though, in the 2 Samuel 21, 15 passage, that David grew weary. Now, David is in his mid-60s now. And so even though he has been a fighter for the majority of his life, he is starting to lose some of his physical ability to keep that fight going. So in a fight, he cannot compete with younger and stronger warriors like he used to. So verse 16, Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of the giants, whose spear weighed 300 shekels of bronze and who was armed with a new sword, thought to kill David. So this guy is related to Goliath. And when he finds out that David is in the fight, he tracks him down with the intention of taking him out. Now what happens? Verse 17, but Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and attacked the Philistine and killed him. So Abishai, despite the fact that David is still angry with him, rescues David in the midst of this fight. Now, there are some other people that are related to the giant that are also mentioned in the 1 Chronicles passage, and I think it might be interesting to mention them here. 1 Chronicles chapter 20, verse number 4, says, then Sibekai the Hushathite struck down Sipai, who was one of the descendants of the giants, and the Philistines were subdued. So this is one of David's men that took out a giant. There was war again with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Yair, struck down Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And there was again war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he also was descended from the giants. And when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, struck him down. These were descended from the giants in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Now, I don't know if all those giants died during this particular war that we're talking about over in 2 Samuel 21, but we know that at least one of them died because they tried to take David out. And that's when David's men decide enough is enough. David can't come into risk any longer. So 2 Samuel 21, middle of the verse 17 says, then David's men swore to him, you shall no longer go out with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel. So they don't want to risk David's life any longer. And then you've got over here the giants mentioned in close proximity to this fight. Which now brings us to another story that is not clearly positioned chronologically, but I think it seems to fit very well with this time period that we're talking about. So David has just survived a coup by his son Absalom, a coup attempt by a member of the tribe of Benjamin, and he has had the Philistines rebel against him, and one of the relatives of Goliath almost took him out. And so the Israelis won't let him go out and fight anymore. So David is in his mid-60s and not allowed to do anything that he's been doing before. And he is no doubt considering his powerlessness because of this. So he makes a fatal choice to bring his spirits up by numbering his warriors to get a sense for himself how powerful a person he is because of how many members of the military he can call up. 1 Chronicles chapter 21 tells us that Satan was involved in this. It says, "Then Satan stood up against Israel and incited David to number Israel." So David is tempted by Satan to put value on the number of soldiers that he has, even though he should not be numbering them for that purpose. And this is going to bring God's judgment upon the land of Israel. And we don't really have enough time to develop that any farther today. So I want you to kind of look at 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21, and we'll come back next time we get into the Word and start bringing those two stories together into the single incident that happened.